Blog Talk Radio.
Do you think they really ready for you? Nah. Do you think that there'll be many of you? Nah. Do you really think they ready for you? Nah. Do you think they really ready for you? Nah. Do you think that there'll be many of you? Nah. Do you really think they ready for you? Nah. Thinking, Chris, shrinking. Nah, I just don't brag about the deals I've been inking. Honorary degrees from Lincoln. I cross borders like those Sheikins and do albums in a weekend. I'm hip-hop speaking, never the weakling. I'm the truth, man, so what are y'all seeking? Them lies and them liars, I still make flyers. I still ride bands and say MC for hire. I'll spit the fire anywhere, any place. Mama never told you to stay out of grown folk face. Then you got them rappers with that cold broke face. They torn around the world, then they going no place. My KRS One moves at its own pace. On vegetable oil, no gas, no waste. Then you got these intellectuals, really they're sexual, but they wanna remain respectable. Stop frying.
Do you think
they really ready for you? Nah. Do you think that there'll be many of you? Nah. Do you really think they ready for you? Nah. Do you think they really ready for you? Nah. Do you think that there'll be many of you? Nah. Do you really think they ready for you? Nah. Thinking me, I say impeccable. Running circles around these intellectuals. What a spectacle. They get mad when I say I and God are identical. You better get on your knees and praise them. These conspiracy theory rappers, I'll blaze them too. Ooh. Deja vu, you seen this all before me, slaying your crew. I'm known by all the kids. I studied Dr. King, man, and all he did. People don't stop calling Chris for gigs. Cause when I'm on the mic, man, I flip they lid. Me getting bullshit. I can't even count all the dough this month I did. From coast to coast, we roasting toast. I'm hot, me and the ice can't get close.
Do
you think they really ready for you? Nah. There'll be many of you now. Do you really think they ready for you now? Do you think they really ready for you now? Do you think that there'll be many of you now? Do you really think they ready for you now? Revolutionaries know the game. We take away the pain like Novocaine. Knowledge reigning supreme, you know the name. This the name that don't play all them games. I ain't gonna call no names or take away no fame. But the airwaves is a shame, and the public don't know who to blame. So they blame rappers like we are insane. Like we are to blame for society's pain. Like they don't know for sure what's in our brains. The more things change, the more they stay the same. Same style oppression, socially rearranged. Many of our problems we already overcame, but we stuck in the past, can't see the change. Stuck in the Hyundai, can't see the range. Stuck in the towers, can't see the planes.
Do
you think they really ready for you? Nah. Do you think that there'll be many of you? Nah. Do you really think they ready for you? Nah. Do you think they really ready for you? Nah. Do you think that there'll be many of you? Nah. Do you really think they ready for you? Nah.
Marvin didn't try to be magic or charismatic at all, but he just was. Even when he sung the national anthem, I mean, it was Marvin Gaye. You know, it was just unique, it was special.
Can you see by the dawn? So proudly we hailed at the twilight land gleaming. Whose broad stripes and bright stars through oh, the sun.
The man you're about to see and hear, should you be so foolish as to have just joined us, is Ray Charles.
Hello. All right. 3, 4.
I got something, yo, in my bones. Make me wanna shout hallelujah. And I wanna sing along. Lift every voice and sing, till it in heaven. Ring with the harmony, oh, liberty. Let us rejoice and rise high. Loud as the Georgia. God of our weary years, God of our silent tears, thou who has brought us to far.
Y'all, we gonna keep it up for this. Lizzie Jones, Michael Sams, 12 Years a Slave. Get me back.
Oh, It's considered one of the most important pieces of civil rights legislation ever passed. But by 5-4, the U.S. Supreme Court today took the teeth out of a law enacted nearly 50 years ago. NewsHour correspondent Kwame Holman begins our coverage.
President Lyndon Johnson signed the landmark law in 1965, and ever since, the Voting Rights Act has policed voting discrimination. But today's decision effectively puts it on hold. Chief Justice John Roberts, writing for the five-member majority, said the law originally distinguished between states that had used barriers to minority voting and had low voter turnout and those that had not. But he wrote, "Today the nation is no longer divided along those lines, yet the Voting Rights Act continues to treat it as if it were." Edward Bloom, speaking for officials in Shelby County, Alabama, who made the challenge to the Voting Act, welcomed the outcome.
"This decision restores an important constitutional order to our system of government, and that requires that all 50 states and every jurisdiction have the laws applied equally to them."
The decision leaves the heart of the law, Section 5, on the books. It requires states, mainly in the Deep South, to get federal approval before changing voting procedures or districts. But the court majority said it cannot be enforced until Congress comes up with new rules for getting that approval, thus moving the responsibility across the street to the Capitol. Sherilyn Eiffel, president of the NAACP Legal Defense Fund, said that's now where her organization will focus.
"We believe that Congress is in a better position than the Supreme Court to determine how voting discrimination plays out in this country. We're disappointed, but now the ball is in Congress's court."
In a statement, President Obama said he was deeply disappointed with the court's decision and urged Congress to restore federal oversight. In the meantime, Attorney General Eric Holder insisted the Justice Department will continue to monitor changes in state and local voting laws.
"Let me be very clear. We will not hesitate to take swift enforcement action using every legal tool that remains to us against any jurisdiction that seeks to take advantage of the Supreme Court's ruling by hindering eligible citizens' full and free exercise of the franchise."
Still, today's decision apparently clears the way for several high-profile laws to take effect, including stricter voter ID requirements in Alabama, Mississippi, and Texas that drew objections from civil rights groups.
And back with us tonight, of course, is Marcia Coyle of the National Law Journal. So tonight, Marcia, Justice Roberts speaking for the court, saying in essence, the world has changed, but the law has not.
He has, Jeff, and here's how he explained his ruling. He read a summary of it from the bench this morning. He began by saying how the Voting Rights Act is a dramatic departure from certain fundamental principles in the Constitution and in our government. For example, states are given broad powers under the Constitution to regulate elections. Fundamental to the structure of government is a belief, a commitment to the equal sovereignty of the states. So the Voting Rights Act, he said, when it imposes current burdens, as it does, has to be justified by current conditions, and the coverage formula does not do that.
And just remind us of that formula. It's the so-called preclearance, right, where they have to apply to say what they're going to do.
There are two sections of the Voting Rights Act that operate in tandem. The coverage formula determines which states or jurisdictions have to conform to Section 5, mm-hmm. which is the pre-approval. Any covered jurisdiction has to get approval of any voting changes from the Justice Department or the federal court in Washington, D.C. It was the coverage formula, not the pre-approval process, that the court struck down today.
So the question for the court, and you said what Justice Roberts is looking at, whether racial minorities continue to face voting discrimination. What evidence was he citing?
He agreed that there is still discrimination today, but the rub here is the coverage formula. He said when Congress designed the formula, it was meant to capture voting tests like literacy tests and also states in which there was low minority voting registration and turnout. Well, he said voting tests have been eradicated, and registration and turnout of minorities in some of the covered states is actually much higher than even in states that are not covered. So the formula, he said, was not meeting current conditions. It was based on data and practices from the 1960s and 1970s. He also discounted the government's argument that Congress had created this enormous record, 15,000 pages in 2006, to justify the reauthorization, incidents of current and past discriminatory practices. And he said that Congress didn't use that record to shape a formula that responded to those current conditions.
Now, the dissent was from Justice Ginsburg, and she referred to what she called second-generation barriers to voting.
Yes. She had 2 points. On that, she said the court really didn't, the majority, didn't really engage Congress's record here. She said Congress had overwhelming evidence of current recent discrimination in voting that was egregious by the covered states. It wasn't, she said, the voting practices, the tests and the registration and turnout. It was second-generation discrimination that is more subtle, that can involve moving a polling place to a location where minorities have no transportation, or even racial gerrymandering of redistricting. So she felt that the majority really didn't address what Congress did here. But her second point was, she said fundamentally this case comes down to who should decide, a court or a Congress, which is explicitly empowered by the 14th and 15th Amendment to enforce the anti-discrimination mandates in those amendments. And she said where Congress has produced 15,000 pages of legislative findings, the court should defer to Congress.
Now, this is a decision that has almost immediate practical effect, right?
It does, judging by what some of the comments have been by some governors.
Mm-hmm.
The governor of Texas said that the photo ID law for voter registration will go into effect immediately. It's considered the most stringent in the country. Also, some of the redistricting plans that have been pending. There is no reason now, it would seem, unless the states and jurisdictions that have been covered by Section 4 want to see what the Justice Department thinks, to actually ask the Justice Department or a federal court whether they're violating the voting rights law.
But short of that, the court is saying it's back in your hands, Congress.
It's up to Congress, the Chief Justice said, to craft a formula that responds to current conditions.
All right. Now, I want to ask you about another decision today. This was the so-called Baby Veronica case.
So the Supreme Court just made a ruling upholding the state of Michigan's prerogative to not have affirmative action in their schools. In fact, let me quote the Associated Press here. In a 6-2 ruling, Michigan voters, they said, had the right to change their state constitution to prohibit public colleges and universities from taking account of race in admissions decisions. Now, we're considered generally a progressive show, and so you might think that I'm outraged by this decision, but not only am I not outraged by it, I agree with it. I think the voters of Michigan do have a right to make that decision. They made that decision. And by the way, further, so that's the constitutional issue. On the policy issue, I generally agree with the voters of Michigan. I think that affirmative action was actually incredibly important in the beginning. Now, anybody who argued against affirmative action for the first however many decades, 2 decades, 3, 4, 5 decades, I think was wrong, because let's be colorblind. Well, that's easy for white folks to say at the time because they had all the jobs. So if you wanted to break into being a cop, being a firefighter, break into the union, into a contractor position or a white-collar position, well, all those jobs belong to white people. So we had to have a way to at least give minorities in this country a fair chance at those jobs. We did for a long time. I now think we've gotten to the point where it does minorities more harm than good to continue to apply affirmative action, because I've seen in my whole lifetime, unfortunately, the other side of that equation, where I've seen different Americans, and not all right-wing, not all conservative, go, oh, yeah, they just got that because of affirmative action. So it unfortunately discredits the great work and accomplishments of so many minorities that I now think that the scales have been tipped, and to be fair, I've thought that for a long time, and that it's doing a little bit more harm than good, even though it was absolutely necessary in the beginning. Now, I think it's fair to disagree about that, and I think that different states should be allowed to vote any way they like. But I will also add that generally right-wingers and who happen to be mainly white that have been pushing for this decision ought to be careful what they wish for.
So let me show you what has happened in the states that they have lifted affirmative action on. Now, in California, that is an incredibly confusing chart, but what you see there is, especially among undergraduates at the very right-hand side, that when they lifted affirmative action, the number of whites in the schools did not increase, they decreased. In fact, for the undergraduates, Asians have caught them, if not passed them. Oops. It turns out when you just look at test scores and grades, the group that does best in this country is not white people at all. In fact, they do substantially worse. It's Asians who do the best. I like them apples. So if you think that's an interesting case study. Now, in California, they're not allowed to give a thumb on the scale of race, but they do consider other things like socioeconomic background, etc. So that those charts that you just looked at are not as skewed as they could be if all they did was look at test scores. Well, that is what they do in some New York high schools, including Stuyvesant. So let's take a look at Stuyvesant and see how that worked out. When you just look at test scores, how do they do? Well, okay, we've got 9 black students, so overall in 2013, not great. 24 Latino students. Oh, wow, all those white students are a lot more, 177. Whoops, 620 Asian students. White folks, how do you like affirmative action now? My guess is all of a sudden, did we say we were against affirmative action? I mean, look, we need an even playing field here. These Asians, I mean, I don't know, it's not fair to compete against them. We need an even playing field. The Supreme Court, we changed our mind. Please, please, please bring affirmative action back. Well, it turns out when you live with affirmative action, you certainly don't get the diversity that we normally are used to in this country, and that is a significant issue, and I think that affirmative action for socioeconomic background is actually really important, probably the right way to go going forward. So if you were born in a position where you're economically disadvantaged, whether you're white, Asian, black, Latino, then I think it's fair to say, hey, listen, they had a harder time, and let's take that into account, okay? But if you just want to do it on test scores, white right-wingers, be careful what you wish for. You just might.
The Supreme Court is upholding the right of voters in Michigan to ban race as a factor in college admission decisions.
It's a decision that's reigniting debate. NBC's Steve Handelsman has the details from Washington.
In a referendum in 2006, 58% of Michigan voters approved amending the state constitution to ban any consideration of race in public college admissions and public employment. At the Supreme Court today, the 6-justice majority upheld that process. Justice Anthony Kennedy writing, "This case is not about how the debate about racial preferences should be resolved. It's about who may resolve it." The court did not rule on the constitutionality of affirmative action, but opponents are still celebrating.
Well, we live in a time with a black president, a black attorney general, when to make the kind of claims that people are being discriminated against and being prevented from entering into positions in a university or a job at a hospital or a public employment project simply no longer makes sense.
The NAACP says affirmative action is still needed.
Segregation and racial inequality exist throughout this country. In housing, we see it in employment, we see it in schools. And so that is something that must be addressed.
Justice Sonia Sotomayor agreed, saying judges ought not sit back and wish away racial inequality. And she said of the Michigan referendum, democratically approved legislation can still oppress minority groups. 8 states now ban consideration of race in admissions and hiring, and more states are now expected to ban it. Now, Steve Handelsman, NBC News, Washington.
The president at the University of Texas at Austin released a statement today following the Supreme Court decision. It says, in part, "We are reviewing today's Supreme Court decision, but based on our preliminary review, we do not believe it has any effect on the university."
I want to go back to our Fox News alert because moments ago voters, the U.S. Supreme Court made a decision now on a case that's been, in fact, waiting for some time now. The Supreme Court issued its decision on race in college admissions. This case came out of Michigan. The court ruled that the state does not have to use race as a factor. In fact, it said voters could change its constitution to prohibit schools from taking race into account. What's the impact on this? Emily Tisch Sussman, campaign director for the Center for American Progress Action Fund, rather. Morning to you, Emily.
Hi, good morning.
And David Webb, SiriusXM radio host and a Fox News contributor. David, good morning to you as well.
Good
David,
morning,
I know
Bill.
You've covered the story quite a bit on radio. What is the impact of this 6-2 ruling?
It's significant. Even with Justice Kagan recused, what we have is a 6-2 decision that says that we have got to end discrimination, which is what affirmative action has become in large part. At a time in our country when there needed to be a change coming out of civil rights, there was a short period for affirmative action, but now it has become a tool, especially with the state institutions in Michigan, of denying access to Americans based on ethnic identity. This is a good decision. It is a needed decision upholding the Sixth Circuit Court initial decision, so therefore Michigan move forward.
Well, when it comes to affirmative action, I mean, this was the case that everybody has been waiting on. Emily, what do you believe? I mean, in the early stages of digesting this decision, what's the effect? What's the impact?
Look, so we'll see more once we see the actual decisions and once we see the actual opinions, but I would actually disagree with David on the fact that this is a massive ruling on the substance of the issue. Even though it was 6-2, the judges were saying that there's different reasons for upholding the law. And let's look at what the actual challenge was. If this is not the substance on whether affirmative action is legal or not legal for a state to be using, the voters of Michigan had gone to the ballot. So it's a matter of whether it is okay for the voters to take strip away the state's ability to use this in state universities on the ballot. Right, so it's sort of similar to the way the Prop 8 decision was in California. Is it okay for the voters to go to the ballot on the issue? And so the court ruled that it is okay for the voters to go to the ballot to decide this issue.
And the three microphones, one of them is being used by me now. What the court said, you're right about that, Emily, that voters could change the Constitution if they wanted. They also said the lower court was wrong, David, when it set aside this case as discriminatory, as discrimination. How do you add that now into the equation as you evaluate?
Well, it goes along with the comment that about the voters. The voters get to choose because our society has advanced. And even Sandra Day O'Connor said that there was a time limit on this. Other justices have said this, that there's a time when affirmative action needs to go away. Our society has advanced. There is access for all. And we need to get back to a point of true fairness, which is competitiveness on the merits. Again, back to the voters, back to the American people,
okay,
and our right to choose.
All right, Emily, I cut you off. Go.
It's quite all right. I think our argument goes to the fact that this is a very live debate in this country. The court did not decide if it is discrimination to still use race as a factor helping or meaningfully, helping minorities get in. This is based on a long history that we've had in this country of not providing the same opportunities for all people and all races. Specifically, it is not that far in our future to get the same opportunities to go to college. And also, I mean, the ruling case on this issue is also in Michigan. Michigan is apparently hot ground for all of this. But saying that, it is not just a benefit to the minority students who are allowed in, it is a benefit to the university. It is a benefit to everybody to have diversity in the classroom.
It is history and it is past. America is not the America it was in the 60s. We're in 2014. We've changed. A woman was the focal point of this case initially and of other cases. So we've got to look at this for where we are as a country. Again, the justice
Do you expect voters in Michigan to go after changing the state constitution? Do we know that answer yet?
I don't think we know the answer, but I expect that there will be a significant effort to make the Constitution reflect the societal changes where we are as a very, very progressive, let's use that term, and very modern society in America.
Okay. Emily, I'll give you the last word.
I do love David calling it a progressive society, but I think that also means that we need to be honest about where people are starting compared to what opportunities they have and what those opportunities mean for them and creating an equal playing field.
Equal outcome doesn't exist, but equal opportunity does exist in America. That is the reality.
Thanks to both of you, David Webb, Emily Tisch Sussman. Thanks for the debate today.
Thank you, Bill.
The Negro. I want to tell you one more thing I know about the Negro. When I went through Las Vegas, North Las Vegas, and I would see these little government houses, and in front of that government house, the door was usually open, and the older people and the kids and there's always at least a half a dozen people sitting on the porch. They didn't have nothing to do. They didn't have nothing for their kids to do. They didn't have nothing for their young girls to do. And because they were basically on government subsidy, and so now what do? They abort their young children. They put their young men in jail because they never learned how to pick cotton. And I've often wondered, are they better off as slaves picking cotton, having family life and doing things, or are they better off under government subsidy?
They just transferred.
Yeah, they did get no more freedom. They got less freedom. They had less family alive and their happiness. You can see in their faces they weren't happy sitting on that concrete sidewalk. Down there they were probably growing their turnips. So that's all government. That's not freedom.
Hello and welcome to Common Sense TV. I'm your host, the Doctor of Common Sense, E.T. William. Please visit the website at www.whateverhappenedtocommonsense.com. You know, there are some things that people can do. To me, it just brings up their character. Trying to defend a racist on either side questions your own damn character. I know you've been seeing a lot of things in the news lately. Some people tried to make Clyde Bundy out to be racist when the man is not racist. Some people tried to defend this L.A. Clippers owner, Donald Sterling, who is a racist. I always tell people, I'm suspicious of anybody that's supposed to have credibility who tries to defend Al Sharpton, who tries to defend Barack Obama, Louis Farrakhan, and Donald Sterling. You might as well be trying to defend Adolf Hitler, you ask me. You can't defend this. You got people on the right and left. You got liberals and so-called conservatives who try to defend certain things. Just like you got people from the left who try to ignore Lyndon B. Johnson's racist ways. They completely ignore.
We're going to take a break right now, everybody. The theme I'm trying to get at is this. Are we slipping back into slavery? 12 Years a Slave. That was an Academy Award hit. Everybody loved it. Blacks loved it. Everybody loved it. Oh, it was such a great movie. What was 12 Years a Slave about? An educated free man being taken back into slavery. Now, early on, I played Voting Rights Act, Affirmative Action, a little bit of Don Sterling, Clyde Bundy. There's a mindset out here, and I don't like it. I would even say the drafting of Michael Sam, good player and all, they may have been homophobic, even I'm kissing a white man. I'm not trying to be... I'm not xenophobic, homophobic, nah. Well, you know what I'm saying? Black and white can't love each other. Follow me, y'all. Just follow me. I'm going to link it up. This has nothing to do with who he loves and what he loves or how he loves. I'm going to link it up. But the point I'm trying to say is we're steady slipping backwards. Laws are being snatched away from us. We've been told we can't come to basketball games. We should be picking cotton again. A whole bunch of stuff. I'm going to have a couple of people calling in today, but, you know, follow me for a second. I'm not trying to throw no conspiracy theory out here like the man trying to hold you down, but there have been a subliminal effort out there to reconstitute, reprogram Black America. First of all, into accepting conditions that are beneath standards. Even taking these politicians that we have in place, not even holding them accountable for our communities. We're accepting so little. I'm going to take a quick break, and I'll be back with you in a minute. 347-838-9825. This is Jimmy's Underground Radio. Thank you for listening in. 347-838-9825. I think you have to cut Ebony. Lined up. Or some delay. All right. Jimmy's Underground Radio Network. Be back in a moment.
You can run on for a long time. Run on for a long time. Run on for a long time. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Go tell that long-tongued liar. Go and tell that midnight rider. Tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter. Tell him that God's gonna cut him down. Tell him that God's gonna cut him down. Well, my goodness gracious, let me tell you the news. My head's been wet with the midnight dew. I've been down on bended knee, talking to the man from Galilee. He spoke to me with a voice so sweet, I thought I heard the shuffle of angels feet. He called my name and my heart stood still when he said, John, go do my will. Go tell that long-tongued liar. Go and tell that midnight rider. Tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter. Tell him that God's gonna cut him down. Tell him that God's gonna cut him down. You can run on for a long time. Run on for a long time. Run on for a long time. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Well, you may throw your rock, hide your hand, working in the dark against your fellow man. But as sure as God made black and white, what's done in the dark will be brought to the light. You can run on for a long time. Run on for a long time. Run on for a long time. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Go tell that long-tongued liar. Go and tell that midnight rider. Tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down.
The Negro. I want to tell you one more thing I know about the Negro. When I went through Las Vegas, North Las Vegas, and I would see these little government houses, and in front of that government house, the door was usually open, and the older people and the kids, and there's always at least a half a dozen people sitting on the porch. They didn't have nothing to do. They didn't have nothing for their kids to do. They didn't have nothing for their young girls to do. And because they were basically on government subsidy, and so now what do? They abort their young children. They put their young men in jail because they never learned how to pick cotton. And I've often wondered, are they better off as slaves picking cotton, having family life and doing things, or are they better off under government subsidy? Yeah, they did get no more freedom. They got less freedom. They had less...
I'm single right now, but back in the slave days, I would have never been single.
It's Slavery Night Live with SNL writer-performer Leslie Jones and special guest Rachel Firestorm.
Leslie Jones did this bit on SNL about Lupita Nyong'o being named the most beautiful woman in the world.
Nyong'o girl.
And she said, you know, how come they don't have a list for the most practical woman in the world?
I'm 6 feet tall and I'm strong, Colin, strong!
And that's when things got all slavey.
Back in the slave days, my love life would have been way better. Massa would have hooked me up with the best brother on the plantation. Every 9 months, I'd just be in the corner just popping them out to Shaq, Kobe, LeBron.
It was very uncomfortable, but it was also very funny.
Well, Ebony.com senior editor Jamila Lemieux wasn't laughing.
It was very hurtful, and as a black woman, it was extremely hard to watch.
I have a problem with white people laughing at slavery. I don't think we've come that far.
I get back to, you know, doing a movie about the Holocaust and making it funny. I mean, that happened too.
See, I didn't think Schindler's List was that funny.
I think he was talking to producers. Anyway, we can solve this definitively because we did a poll and 80% say it's hilarious. Then again, the internet loves racism. Thanks, edgy racial humor. You're always stirring up trouble.
Welcome to another edition of Hollywood Clowning Black Women. What's up, everybody? It's your boy, Tommy Sotomayor. You know, there was a whole lot of backlash about the lack of black women that are on Saturday Night Live cast, as well as black women who are writers. So this past January, Saturday Night Live, ABC, and Lauren Michael, decided to appease black women by hiring the woman that you see on the side of your screen there. And her name is Sahir Zamata. As well as they hired two writers, LaKendra Tookes and Leslie Jones. Now, this triumvirate, this threesome, came up with a hilarious skit. What I want you guys to see is how these three black women came up with this skit for Saturday Night Live. Enjoy.
This week, Lupita Nyong'o was named the most beautiful person in the world by People Magazine. Here with her thoughts is our in-house image expert, Leslie Jones.
Thank you very much, Colin. Hello, everybody. I wanted to come out here tonight and congratulate Lupita on winning People's Most Beautiful Person, and I agree that she is very beautiful. But for me, personally, I'm waiting for them to put out the most useful list. You know what I'm saying? Because that's where I'm going to shine.
Most useful?
That's what I said, you delectable Caucasian. Let me ask you a question. If you walked in a club and you saw me and Lupita standing at the bar, who would you pick?
Wow.
Yeah, I know. You would pick Lupita.
Wow.
But let me ask you this. If you was in the parking lot and three Crips is about to whoop your ass, who you gonna pick then?
I would pick you.
You're damn right you would. And that's my point. The way we view black beauty has changed. Look at me. See, I'm single right now. But back in the slave days, I would have never been single. I'm 6 feet tall and I'm strong, Colin. Strong! I mean, look at me. I'm a Mandingo.
You're not saying you'd rather be a slave, right?
No, that is not what I'm saying. I do not want to be a slave. Hell, I don't like working for you white people right now. And y'all pay me. I'm just saying that back in the slave days, my love life would have been way better. Master would have hooked me up with the best brother on the plantation. And every 9 months, I'd be in the corner having a super baby. Every 9 months, I'd just be in the corner just popping them out. Just Shaq, Kobe, LeBron, Timbo Slice,
Sinbad.
That's what I'm saying. I'm saying I would be the number one slave draft pick. All of the plantations would want me. I'd be on television like LeBron announcing which plantation I was going to go to. I would be like, I'd like to take my talents to South Carolina. I do believe that there's going to be a lot of opportunities there for me. Now, I can't even get a brother to take me out for a cheap dinner. I mean, damn, can a bitch get a beef bowl? Can a bitch get a beef bowl?
Can a bitch get a beef bowl?
Leslie Jones, everybody.
There you have it, people. This was a concoction of three black women. Let me give you their names again. You can go and read the article. The actress, her name is Sahir Zamata. The two women that helped write this skit, LaKendra Tookes and Leslie Jones. All three black women who wrote a skit like this. Let me tell you the elements that are in this skit. Number one, you have a dark-skinned black woman. You have a big black woman. You have a black woman that does the whole buckeye and over-talk and you know that. You know what you would call a coon. Now, here's what I would like to see happen. I bet you won't see it happen, though. I bet you won't see Tyrone and none of them other fools go after this individual. I bet you won't see them drop their information. I bet you won't see them talk about how they're making black women look bad. I bet you won't hear them call them a coon because they're working for white people and actually doing things to appease white people. I guarantee you, with that audience as big as Saturday Night Live is, which is bigger than mine, with as much influence as Saturday Night Live has, which is a lot bigger than mine, no one of those black people will go after, have ever went after, Saturday Night Live. Either it's writers. I just gave them all the names they needed. I guarantee you won't see one post about Lauren Michaels. I guarantee you won't see one post about any of these three names. Let's continue. She called herself a Mandingo. She spoke as if she would be a violent individual. Remember what she said? But if you was outside the club and three Crips walked up on you, who you want with you? So this black superwoman is able to beat up three male Crips. This black superwoman talked about how she has this need. I told y'all the two things that black women value more than anything on earth is dick and attention. What did she talk about? Dick and attention. She said she'd have no problem getting a man if it was slave days. So she made fun of the fact that most black women were not able to choose who they mated with, and they were only brood mares. They were only there for sex, either at the behest of the white man or, well, either both was at the behest of the white man. It was just either fuck this slave to get us some more slave kids or fuck me so I can get my rocks off. Do you understand that this was a skit again written by black women? Poor black woman. She referred to the white man as delectable, you know, because black women's lust for white men is at an all-time high. That's probably why a lot of them didn't even consider back then getting raped. It wasn't rape. Probably was fun for them. At least that's the way the black women decided to write it. This woman talked about how difficult it is for her to get a man. As I told you, black women have a problem getting a man now. That's why they have to raise them boys to say, "Your mama black." She was able to go on this show and act a complete idiot. For what? Yet where are the pro-black blacks? Because if you notice, the pro-black blacks don't attack black women. They don't say anything about black women because that's the audience in which everyone uses because, well, black women have money and the best way to use them is to appease them. Again, there's been no backlash over this. Yes, Donald Sterling backlash, but no backlash over Saturday Night Live. Can someone explain this to me? Oh, yes, there were elements of it that was very funny. Because everybody loves laughing at black women. They're easy to laugh at because they don't know when they're being made fun of. So you can laugh at them and they think you're laughing with them. You do have to understand the reason why I say the black woman and the white man are two separate sides of the same coin. Because black women are one of the enforcing arms of white supremacy. They enjoy it. These black women got together, finally got a role on this lame show, and this is what they came up with. So what I'm asking is, where's the outrage and where's the backlash amongst black people at how they were just portrayed, especially black women, and all the black men who've been stalking me and my family? I would love to see this week. No, tomorrow. As soon as you see this, I know you stalk my page and watch everything I do. So I'd like to see one of you go fuck with any one of these women. Lauren Michaels, NBC, anyone at Saturday Night Live. For this, as you say, making black women look bad. We're making black women look bad. Let's see if you do or say anything about this. But you won't, because they're after YouTube fame. And YouTube fame means fucking with me because, well, I say something back. Lauren Michaels won't say anything back. I won't get any fame for it. So I will not attack white supremacy. I'll only attack another black man and claim it's for, you know, black power. Again, go read the people behind the script and all of this stuff, and you tell me, go on, you tell me, if this is not Hollywood clowning black women. Actually, it's black women in Hollywood clowning black women. Thomas Sotomayor, I'm out.
As I walk the streets of Hollywood Boulevard, big and hard it was for those who starred in the movie, portraying the roles of butlers and maids, slaves and hoes. Many intelligent black men seem to look up to the lines when on the screen. Like I guess I figure you to play some jigaboo on the plantation. What else can a nigga do? And black women in this profession, after playing a lawyer, out of the question. But what they played Aunt Jemima is the perfect term, even if now she got a perm. So let's make our own movies like Spike Lee, cause the roles being offered don't strike me as nothing that the black man could use to earn. Burn Hollywood, burn.
He was. That's our job. So I want to go back to the SNL controversy, Chris, because this is the context for this, is that Leslie Jones, Sasheer Zamata, and the third writer were actually hired because SNL was criticized for not being diverse enough. So now they bring this diversity, and sort of ironically, was it that maybe SNL's format was really not ready for sort of what she was bringing to the table?
I think what a lot of people are outraged about is that it just wasn't smart. It wasn't smart humor. She just came on and began talking about slavery, comparing Lupita Nyong'o, who's really having her Cinderella moment, to being at a slave auction or being on a plantation. It was in poor taste, and if she could have somehow worked in Donald Sterling or Clive and Bundy and somehow made it smarter, we have a story up right now on the Griot that said it would have been a hit. But it was a big mess. It was, and the timing right now, we're in a really racially sensitive, heightened timing with all these things happening, so SNL probably should have known better. But it's SNL at the end of the day. It's a comedy show.
It's a comedy show. And I want to read, we actually reached out to some comedians, Jackie, just to get their commentary as well. Yeah. And Claudia Wallace, who's one of the folks who sent us back a statement, this is what she said. She said, I wasn't as offended, but it did make me uncomfortable. The energy of that piece didn't fit the show. It made SNL look desperate to show, hey, we can be as edgy as Key and Peele, but honestly, they can't. Is the issue here that this is really a broadcast network format? So it's a little bit different than, let's say, a cable format or even live sketch comedy.
You do have to be more careful on national network television, but I respectfully disagree with you. I know Leslie. I've seen her perform hundreds of times. She's aggressively funny. That's her job. And they said way worse things on Weekend Update throughout the year. She was amazing. She was hilarious. Being a juicy woman myself, I know I'll go for a top dollar in the slavery day because I have birthing hips and birthing boobs. She knew what she looks like. Her father told her what the world was like back then. Black people were like the way you buy shoes in Macy's and Nordstrom. We were on display. That's the truth. So the fact that it's funny now, we're just making light of something that was horrible. But that's the reality.
I think that a lot of folks, though, are outraged because we haven't seen black women on SNL that often. We see Sasheer Zamata on for the first time making history. This is the first time that we've seen a black writer on SNL in a long time. And this is what she comes out saying. That's why folks,
she
I think,
came out
are
like,
most
bam,
upset.
I'm here, let's do it. Yeah. And I'm proud of her. You're on it. Take the time. Take the opportunity. A black woman is on it. Now you're going to hear how funny we can be. And I'm proud of her.
I look forward to see more of her. I want to see what else she can do.
You can't contain that in the writing room. She's going to be on camera way more than it. This is how she is all the time.
Right. Well, I think we've definitely seen the edge that she brings to the table, and this debate, I'm sure, will continue. I'm sure it's continuing right now on Twitter. Yeah. And we.
Fraud, the system, the news, television.
science. I'm the fire, and ever silent, so violent, come on. One thing I don't believe, they call us the murdering thieves. For grief, they drop bombs, kill babies overseas, niggas in jail for bags of weed. You a 15, spread the word. In school, some of that shit you learn. Really don't need in the world to succeed. I'm a hip-hop spiritual nerd. Don't give a damn about nouns and verbs. Like that shit gon' say to earth. Not concerned with your math to advance for your class. Special ed, no, super sperm, never burn. So call me the melanin man. The holy lands where I stand. Don't plan to take a pilgrimage. Here's a quote, it goes like this. Black folks have hope in what they wrote. If you won't, I will.
Okay. All right, so we got this girl named Leslie Jones. She's a legendary, you know, I'll say legendary, but, you know, she's a black comedian. Bitch, ugly as hell. She did a skit on Saturday Night Live, I guess because of Time Magazine, which made Lupita Nyong'o the beautifulest person in the world. They gave her the most beautifulest person award. So then this chick gets on here and she does this skit where she says that she would have loved being a slave back then. Humping the black slave, saying that she would have never been single because at that time the white slave masters would have the black women, or they would probably have sex or try to rape them, or probably would have them have sex with some of the strongest black men there, and basically so they could have strong whatever genes going down the line, whatever. To me, this is like cooning to the maximum level. This is cooning to the 100% level. And I'm telling you right now, I cannot stand Conan. I really can't stand it when black people feel they have to sell out and they have to just go on national television and prove that they are just selling out. It's a sad world, man. Black pride is not even existing no more. Now, I love all races, but sometimes it was moments in my life where I couldn't stand black coons. I mean, black people. But I can't stand ignorance of Negroes. And then she says right here, like, I mean, look at me. I'm a Mandingo. I'm just saying that back in the slave days, my love life would have been way better. Master would have hooked me up with the best brother on the plantation. This chick is ratchet looking, ignorant, and I mean, why would you do that? Like, why would you even make a joke about that? It's just pure bull crap, man. But anyway, this is what I want to see. I mean, I just couldn't believe this. This was just, it wasn't even funny. I mean, to me, Saturday Night Live is not even funny. It's not. It's bull crap. I mean, I barely even laugh at some of stuff, whatever, but, you know, I might laugh at Seth Rogen's Neighbors. But other than that, though, it's chick right here, which I wouldn't want to be with her. The only time I'd probably be with her is if I was drunk. But yeah, it's your boy Jay Davis. Hit that like button, comment, subscribe, peace.
So there's been this big controversy around SNL and their lack thereof, or they're not hiring an African American cast member. So now SNL has hired an African-American cast member, and now they've added two African-American writers, to join the team. So Sahar Zamata is the new SNL cast member. And beyond that, they've added two writers. They've added Leslie Jones, and they've also added LaKendra to join their writing staff. I don't have a last name on LaKendra. We got to find that out. We'll find that out and post it in the comments. So now they have a total of three black women between writing and cast. Hopefully this will help SNL's ratings, but beyond that, it just helps to have a diverse cast, point blank period. I mean, let's just be real talk about it. Like, and not to mention the fact that, you know, some of the best SNL skits were done by a diverse cast. And so many great minority actors and actresses got their start on Saturday Night Live. So I'm happy that the network has decided to make the direction in that way. It's sad that it took so much pressure and so much time to get it done.
Yeah, so there's a lot of controversy going on regarding the SNL's, the new black girl on there. I think Leslie Jones is her name or whatever. The joke she made a slave joke about slave girls and how she would have got more men back then or be more valuable within a relationship game if she was a slave because she was more big girl back then, you know. It was a funny joke, so I don't know what the big deal is about it. Everybody hating on her, acting like she said something real vile or, you know, disgusting. But the thing is, it was a funny joke. It's a joke. And if it wasn't funny, then it'd be a problem. And it was real. And she didn't say nothing really offensive to me. She was hilarious, dog. The part where she was talking about the slave super babies that she'd be making, like LeBron and Kobe, whoosh, whoosh, and all that shit. I was tripping. I admit it was hilarious. But at the same point, I can see how people would be kind of surprised that it was a harsh way to make a debut, you know, to come into the game. I guess she wanted to come in blasting, all guns all out. But and she did a good job. It was funny to me, so I don't see why they're kicking her around so hard, you know, whatever. But I'm glad she didn't get up on her knees or whatever and start apologizing like all these other motherfuckers are when people get at them for not being PC. She stood by her guns, whatever. She's like, yo, it's a joke, and she was right. If Chris Rock or Chappelle or either Eddie Griffin or somebody like that would have said it, it wouldn't have been a big issue. But since she was, maybe I don't know if it was because she was a girl. Or because of SNL, is it not the right format for that? The audience is a little, you know, little peons and shit. I don't know. But she went hard and she kept to her guns. I'm gonna even go harder, so I respect her for that, for not backing down. And she was right. It was funny. Like Sarah Silverman had a joke kind of resembling that. And there goes, fuck that. It was even crazier though. Sarah Silverman shit. She was like, I was dating a black guy before. And he was a real big, strong black man. And she's like, oh, yeah, I really like you. You would have been like a great slave back in the day. You would have made a wonderful slave. You're so big and whatever. And Sarah Silverman didn't catch that much slack for it. So I don't see what he's bothering this lady for it. You know, this lady's a black lady saying this shit. So the other black people getting at her, you know. So they all like them fucking, they remind me of Samuel L. Jackson on fucking Candyland and shit from Django. Black people trying to stab each other in the back and shit. You know, just leave her alone. Let her do her thing, man. So it's all a funny joke based off the fact that I think Lupita won People's Most Beautiful Person in the World, which is great. It's good to see a black woman being recognized for her beauty, even though I'm thinking they just gave it to her because she won the Oscar or whatever, you know, just jumping on a bandwagon because they never probably would have picked her otherwise, you know. Because she, you know, she ain't got the typical Hollywood beauty thing. She's beautiful, but you know they don't want her. She's more like a Grace Jonesy type cut. You know, got, she got the fresh Caesar going on, the taper cut. They hating on it. They don't like the natural look on a black woman. I'm glad they are recognizing that she's beautiful though. You know, and this lady for SNL, she got a different look too. So I'm glad SNL picked her. Even though I'm kind of. SNL's kind of suspect because they actually had to be alerted to the fact that they don't have any black people on their cast. Keenan had to make them know that they don't have any black ladies since Maya Rudolph left or whatever. So then they went and drafted black ladies. So when she said she's like the number one slave draft pick, she's almost like that on SNL, the slave draft pick girl. Because they had to pick like three black females for SNL. They had to be forced to get those on there because they didn't do them themselves or whatever. But I like the way they got her. She's smart. She's funny. You know, she's not the typical dumb, pretty, showbiz, no talent type girl that they would put on there, whatever. She's pretty big, though. I ain't gonna admit, though. She's actually 6 feet. She's really pretty brolic. Girl is diesel, though. I don't know, son. Might wanna give her the Adam's apple inspection, get another finger dingle, and see what's going on down there, dog. I don't know. She's kind of muscular there, son. I don't know, dog. I don't know. I gotta step on her toes. She was kind of, and she go, You know what I'm saying? Might be kind of suspect, dog. But, you know, I like big girls. I like strong women. Shit, I fuck Denise Messino if I had the chance, nigga. Denise Messino, Alina Popa. So, you know, I don't give a fuck. I take down these big, strong chicks, nigga. You know, I don't care, dog. You know what I'm saying? Holler at me, girl. Girl, I'll get you a fucking beef bowl. I'll get you that beef bowl. Keep up the funny writing. You know what I'm saying? I need a girl like you. Whoop the Crips asses in the parking lot. All that shit was funny, son. So get off her dick. Oh, she ain't got one, hopefully. Get off her pussy, her fucking clit, and, you know, let her do her thing, man. Stop hating. And let me get back to this construction deal I got to do. You know what I'm saying? I got motherfucking a bet to win.
So, here recently on Saturday Night Live, Leslie Jones does a skit, a comic skit, where she congratulates Lupita for winning the Most Beautiful Person Award. She does that. Let me pause here and say that I've been seeing a lot of black folk play Lupita. Black men and women playing the shit out of Lupita. Cooning against your own people. I don't understand that shit. Like, what for? Like, you can even do that. That doesn't make any sense how... She ain't saying shit to y'all, but people gonna be talking shit about her because she won the Most Beautiful Person Award. Well, Leslie Jones, the comedian, who has been a comedian for a long fucking time now, I never thought she was funny in any type of way. She congratulates Lupita on Saturday Night Live, but then follows with a bunch of coon shit that she decides to say about what type of slave she would have been. A big, strong slave. Says she wouldn't have had no relationship problems back then. She wasn't them type of comedians. She'll downplay her problems with finding men and shit like that and completely ignoring the fact that she's a ugly motherfucker. We're going to skip over that. That might be where your problem's coming from. But she says during slavery, she wouldn't have had those type of issues. Because Massa would have been breeding her with other big, strong black men so she could have big, strong black babies to be slaves. She named basketball players. LeBron, a couple of other motherfuckers. I forget all of them, but she started naming a bunch of athletes. Now, she would have been having back in the day to pick, you know, as much cotton as she possibly could, and they would have transported her. Or she would have wanted to be transported to different, you know, plantations to be fucked by the biggest, strongest black male worker there. Like, that, to me, that is complete and utter motherfucking cooning. Black women were raped back then by the slave masters. They act like white men been wanting black women since they got over here, to the point of taking it from them. Acting like that. Mating with other black men, they didn't want to have to want to mate with those black men. But to get the biggest, strongest, you know, litter, this what had to happen. And to make a joke out of that shit. Like, as a comedian, you can do anything. I understand comedy. Like, people want to fucking laugh and shit like that, but at what point are we going to take our pride and put it over wanting to fucking laugh all the goddamn time? When is shit going to stop being fucking funny? Like, that shit wasn't funny at all to me. But you million white folk were laughing. Like, is this, she really cooning like that in front of us? LOL. Saturday Night Live, let the shit be aired. They could have came up with any other idea. They knew this was going to happen, what they were doing. They called it Saturday Night Live, but they practiced the shit. They could have been like, nah, that's not a good idea. You know, nah, it's just too much. She would have never been single back in the slave days. She'd have much rather had her pussy passed around and she was forced to have babies by the strong black man on the plantation. This is what she would have preferred. This is what was funny to her. At some point, y'all, we're going to have some pride. And this type cooning that happens, this motherfucker, and that's all she is, Leslie Jones, you are a coon. Just in case this video makes it to you, you are a motherfucking coon, and you should be ashamed of your goddamn self. Seriously. I'm going to post a link up.
Well, he was. That's our job.
I want to go back to the SNL controversy, Chris, because this is the context for this, is that Leslie Jones, Sasheer Zamata, and the third writer were actually hired because SNL was criticized for not being diverse enough. So now they bring this diversity, and sort of ironically, was it that maybe SNL's format was really not ready for sort of what she was bringing to the table?
I think what a lot of people are outraged about is that it just wasn't smart. It wasn't smart humor. She just came on and began talking about slavery, comparing Lupita Nyong'o, who's really having her Cinderella moment, to being at a slave auction or being on a plantation. It was in poor taste, and if she could have somehow worked in Donald Sterling or Cliven Bundy and somehow made it smarter, we have a story up right now on the Griot that said it would have been a hit. But it was a big mess. It was, and the timing right now, we're in a really racially sensitive, heightened timing with all these things happening, so SNL probably should have known better. But it's SNL at the end of the day. It's a comedy show.
It's a comedy show. And I want to read, we actually reached out to some comedians, Jackie, just to get their commentary as well. Yeah. And Claudia Wallace, who's one of the folks who sent us back a statement, this is what she said. She said, I wasn't as offended, but it did make me uncomfortable. The energy of that piece didn't fit the show. It made SNL look desperate to show, hey, we can be as edgy as Key and Peele, but honestly, they can't. Is the issue here that this is really a broadcast network format? So it's a little bit different than, let's say, a cable format or even live sketch comedy.
You do have to be more careful on national network television, but I respectfully disagree with you. I know Leslie. I've seen her perform hundreds of times. She's aggressively funny. That's her job. And they've said way worse things on Weekend Update throughout the years. She was amazing. She was hilarious. Being a juicy woman myself, I know I'll go for a top dollar in the slavery day.
I want to tell you one more thing I know about the Negro. When I go through Las Vegas, North Las Vegas, and I would see these little government houses, and in front of that government house, the door was usually open, and the older people and the kids, and there's always at least a half a dozen people sitting on the porch. They didn't have nothing to do. They didn't have nothing for their kids to do. They didn't have nothing for their young girls to do. And because they were basically on government subsidy, and so now what do? They abort their young children. They put their young men in jail because they never learned how to pick cotton. And I'm
347-838-9825. Now, most of you all was tweeting in trying to say, how am I linking Leslie Jones, 12 Years a Slave, Affirmative Action, and the Voting Rights Act? Well, let me tell you how I connected those parallels together. 12 Years a Slave was a movie about a free man, a free educated man, a free educated man who had property, money, you know, a well-to-do black man. Got snatched back into slavery. Message, no matter how far you go, you're still a slave. Now, here we got Clive Bundy, you know, with a little rant. To me, you know, you can take it how you feel. Sterling, same way. Leslie Jones, I played the pros and cons. Now, back with Michael Sands, here you got this black, six-foot guy just getting drafted, which everybody called the slave trade anyway, just getting drafted. And sitting next to him was his white boyfriend. Now, I'm not tripping on who you can love or what you can love or how you can love. But there's always been an image of slavery, of the white man dominating over the big black guy. You know, people would say, man, that guy's 16. How can that man be beat up by that little man with whip? How? If Michael Sands was a straight man and he had a white woman with him, Ebony, Jet, all the black media would say he's selling out. Where is the outcry with all the black fags? Excuse me, I apologize. The black homosexuals. Where's the outrage? But y'all not good enough for him? You know, he should have came out with somebody with his pants sagging down some gold chain. You know what I'm saying? But the point I'm saying is this. I'm not saying who you can love and can't love, But in the slavery days, things like that happened and took place. I'm just saying, is it a pattern? Is it a pattern? Are we slipping back into slavery? Let me bring my man in from Detroit. His daughter dead. What's up, Coop? How you doing?
Peace, 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 Jim. I feel you. I heard you say, where the outcry from the black homosexuals?
You would outcry at. If that was a white woman, black women across America would be in an outrage right now. You know what I'm saying?
They're going to accept it. They're going to accept that over something else.
This is the point I'm saying. Where's the outrage? You know? I mean, the outrage was this. Now, I'm not being...
If it would have been a thug from St. Louis, he would have been one of them thugs from the East St. Louis. He played in Missouri, right? Ain't he from Missouri?
Right. From Missouri, East St. Louis, the guy St. Louis. I mean, why not a guy with some bling, gold teeth? Straight up. Look like Lil Wayne. Why not have that guy? Why not go have some Thuggy Love?
They ain't came out the thug. Like, they ain't came out the closet yet. The black thug, gay black thug.
Hold on. Listen, if a big, strong, 6'3", 240-pound, cock-strong, muscle-bound cat can beat you in a second and come out, how come, with Lil Wayne coming out, everybody coming out. I mean, hey. What I'm saying is, all I'm saying is this. I'm going to just have the mic for a minute. Where's the outrage? And that's what I was trying to link it to now. Again, you can love you want to love, do what you want to do. I'm not tripping on that. What I was trying to say is that there is an image that is being put upon us, forced upon us, you know, and we got to take it or leave it, especially as Christians. But I'm not going to go religious and fair about it for a second, but... In the slavery,
Steve asked the question, like, are we going back? I think the response is we never left. It's just a different, we just, you know what I'm saying, even though it's always just now, but it's a different type of slavery because, and that's the thing too, Jim, like I said last week, you know, a lot of people, we don't study history. We really don't see the whole big picture, and I kind of just stepped out. And I see it a lot more now because, like I said, have we really left? I asked this question while I was really building with a couple of guys a couple of months ago, and I kind of made the comment. It was like, really, what, you know how people talk about, you know, well, we have civil rights and slavery and all of these things, but really since we've been over here in America, man, what really have they done? What really has happened? You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, we living a lot different. Yeah, we can't, you know, we not necessarily get lynched, but Trayvon Martin, you know what I'm saying? So what can you say that has really changed? You know what I'm saying? Like, what can you say has been done since we've been over here? Like, what have they really done for us? Nothing. It's always been, and it's always since we've been over here year after year. I mean, it's the same old thing. So has it really gone anywhere, or is it just, you know, just a new movie? It's probably 13th part 300.
Well, check this out. My thought just went somewhere else for a second while you're doing your piece. You know, with the affirmative action that just got kicked out in Michigan, you know, really, it's a sad day because mostly Asians and Hispanics have been getting the month of the affirmative action piece of the pie. I'm for black universities. I feel that all the black minds should go to black universities, with that being said. But I do feel it's a struck down that so many people die for that right to get put up there that is being taken away. But I feel that blacks should be separated from minorities. With that being said, it was the people who... It was a student from black university that changed America. You fella realize that. The people who changed America did not come from Harvard and Yale,
yeah,
or Chicago.
Yeah.
They came from,
yeah,
Morehouse, Hampton, Howard. You know, I mean, if you go back to trace the roots of the movement that changed the way America looked 50 years ago, That's where those leaders came from. And what has happened is all our great minds have been infected, you know. And now our black university is closing up.
Closing up.
Our black university is not, I mean, I'm not saying they're not doing what they're supposed to do, because I got a damn, man, I got a top-notch education from one of the greatest universities of all time.
Exactly.
I'm not complaining about what I got from. I sent my children down there. I know what they're going to get, you know. I know what they're going to get. And let me give you an example. Thurgood Marshall, black college. Let me go. Michael Steele, black college. Herman Cain, black college. You know what I'm saying, Mother? I mean, Stokely Carmichael, black college.
It goes on and on.
Hold on. Dare I say, Jesse Jackson, black college.
Even if you want to, even you would throw Dr. King in there, whatever, you agree or disagree.
Disagree.
Black college.
At college.
But, you know, that's the thing, Jim. It's like, man, I think, man, and it's the thing, you know, I know media not going to never come out and it's not their job to anyway. But my thing is, man, when is it going to be the time, man, when we just really realize that, and I mean, I'm not saying, you know, not because I know you run up office and everything, but it's like that the white man's world can't do anything for us. Anything that they get, it's almost like it's almost like we're living in, it's almost like the society even gives us cancer. Like we can't even function in it. We either going to turn out to be the thuggish of the thug. My man, Mr. Seals, Mike Seals, that's his name, right? You're going to be
Mike
that.
Sam.
You know what I'm saying? It's like we either we're going to be the, you know, the conscious, you know, speaking out, and then you got your Marcus Garvey, you know what I'm saying? You got your Marcus Garvey, you got all the people in our history that have done those things. It's like, so which one are you going to be? And I choose to be the Marcus Garvey type. But then when you be that kind of type, what happened to him? You know what I'm saying? It's like,
What about the Stokely Carmichael type?
He left the country.
What about this? No, I mean, listen.
What?
Right now, black America needs SNCC. Black America needs CORE. I ain't going to say right now we need the MIA or the NIA or you know. What I'm coming from is this. Because this is not, I beg to differ, my black college brethren. Ain't the white man world no more. Let me give you an example. I know you come from there. Just play with me for a second. We had Kofi Annan. Now, Kofi Annan was in charge. He's the Security General of the United Nations. Black man. We got Barack Obama. We had Colin Powell before him. Condoleezza Rice before him. That's the whole thing. These are the faces of America on foreign soil all around the world.
I don't mean the skin color. You know what I'm saying?
Hold on, let me dig it now. All I'm saying is, it's back to 12 years a slave. Right now, black America is being poisoned, just like carbon monoxide. It's odorless, and you can't smell it. But it's being poisoned, and you've been slowly evaporated by it, and it's slowly killing us. The point I'm saying is, there are intellectuals. There are everybody out there, but who's passing it on? Who's paying attention? Who's giving up? The point I'm saying is this. If you're a spiritual man, they say only 144,000 are going to go to heaven. And the world of the spirit is damn near a billion strong. Now think about that shit. Out of a population of a billion strong, if you believe in the Bible, only 144,000 John Buffalo's going to make it. More of us going to make it. Now, what I'm saying is, everybody got it. No, I ain't gonna say everybody's striving the spot, but we built this country. This country, America, was built on the backs of slaves and blood and toil. Matter of fact, the white man that is running America now has only been here two generations. So what I'm saying is that until we, this is a quote that Lauryn Hill said. If she said this in the Miseducation of Lauryn Hill. She said this, it seems that we lose the game before we even start to play. Meaning, you're too scared to play the game. You're too scared to lay our lives down. You're scared to make change. We right now are get along to go along. Because in that girl's skit, she said, the delectable white man, you. You know, you're the delectable white man.
See, that's what I'm saying. So that's my point.
Listen, the black woman jacking a white man, that's last week. This week, the black athlete kissing a white man, loving a white man. Again, whether you, I'm not tripping. You too scared to be your
no,
black?
I'm tripping on it. So yeah, so that's my point. It's like so that's the thing too. Like I said, I know the media never gonna bring it out, but you really even when they have certain movies, and it's not gonna come out in Hollywood. It's only when we really build. I mean, just think about. And that's what I mean by the white world per se. It's not the color. It's like when you think about it, Jim. We have been the slavery fucked us up. You know what I'm saying? To the point that where now this is what we have now, but it's still the result. So do we really have our real mind? Are we really in our conscious, spiritual, who we really are, essence, state of mind? Just from the things you just mentioned, we not. Who would get up there and crack jokes on being dick down by whoever, you know what I'm saying, during a time where you didn't have, like I said last week, when you didn't have freedom over your body, even if you had kids, they ain't yours. You ain't getting paid off of them. The master using those to get paid. So who would crack jokes on something like that and thinking that you living in a safe net time that you able to do that? Like you mentioned, the 12 years a slave. I just recently watched it a couple of weeks ago. I really didn't want to because I pretty much knew anyway, but just looking at that, getting beat because you want to take a bath, you know what I'm saying? I'm going to make the black man beat you. You know, just all of that type of stuff and nothing besides the real, true conscious community really break down the psychological aspects of what slavery has done in us and then turn it into fucking coons and it turns us into homosexuals and it turns us into straight thug. You know what I'm saying? That's my point. You're either going to be on what side of the spectrum you're going to be or we're going to be the straight revolutionary or the conscious person based on how it looks for each individual. But it's like, even if you see a black face running the United Nations, it's like, okay, that's just a black face, but what is your mindset? Are you still on that we have poverty in the world? Like, really, what's up with that? You know, like, we living in the world, really, just doing, like, you said about...
I go here. People got to realize, you know me being a history major out of West, people got to realize, you right on that. But I watch Kofi Annu wheel some shit to George Bush, like, hold the fuck on, nigga, nah. No, to the point, that's why he lost his job. Now, let's go back to Condi and Colin. The point I'm saying is, yeah, we can say it's a black face, whatever. But I'm not even going on a black face. I'm going on something with the big Q word, qualification. Qualification. You know what I'm saying? You don't put no dummy in charge of being this person because they're black. You know, what I'm saying is qualification. You know, we have the qualifications to run America, corporation, and our own selves. We have the qualifications. It's just that those that have the qualifications to do shit, we shit on the motherfuckers. Point the fuck blank. You know, even our own hatred. Military Republican will have you. I'm going to go here again.
That's kind of like the slave mentality, like you said, even with this old, whatever Donald Sterling said. Tonight, it's like, okay, the slave mentality is for us. When we get paid and we get in those positions, what we do is the slave mentality is you're not going to do all of this to go help your people out. You're still doing it to ultimately going to help out the world or the white world or help continue to spread the seed of racism or white supremacy. And that's what we do when we get in those positions because that's what slavery was inbred in us for us to do. Like, no, you're not going to take care of your own. Like my man, 12 years a slave, when he finally... You know, when he was, knowing he was, smart in that particular day, and when his master found out how smart he was, when he figured out how they can, I guess, go down the canal, whatever where was that little river or whatnot, and they found, you smart, you know what I'm saying? But you've just been, this smartness has still benefited the master, you know what I'm saying? So it's like, it's what we do still benefit that continues even racism that goes against us. You know, like my man, he called out Magic, today. Like, oh, yeah, he don't do nothing for no black people. You know, the Jewish people, this is what the Jewish people do. We do this. You know, and that go to show really almost shitting on itself. I go to show, okay, well, the Jewish Holocaust wasn't as bad as slavery because you all can able to help out your own with us. slavery caused us to continue to be more, I mean, like I said, jealous of each other, or more just like, I ain't about to help out no. You, I'll be like, we so bad in certain senses. Yeah, you don't want to help out some niggas. Like, I don't want to help this nigga out. You know what I'm saying? Because we so in our lowest state. Yeah, you don't even want to be around your own kind. Because like, damn, this nigga is ignorant. You don't want to be around him. So then when people do so-called blow up, they don't even want to take their money to help out the hood because of whatever situation. Or that's still that cold, like, nah, you ain't taking your money to go help this out. You're going to take this money to go do something else with it, which in turn is that really our money. You know, like it's like everything we do is almost still benefit. It doesn't benefit us based on how our communities still are. And like we said last week, our communities are worse than it's almost ever been. Like I said, what's the shower, what's going on there? Man, you look around Detroit, man, I take you around, you come around some neighborhoods, then probably 20 years ago when you was up here, you probably be like, damn, what happened? Now, I wouldn't say 20 years. I mean, if you've been up here within the last 5 years, within 5 years, it's straight Beirut. You know, just on how the house and how it looks. So it's like, so we are in our, we have these, like, millionaires, but we still, like, messed up, man, just on how our communities are. So it's like, what is that? That's the psychological aspect that people are not going to really mention. Like I said, they're not going to mention it in the media. So then I hit, and that's when you go to hip-hop. That's when hip-hop's supposed to be doing it. But hip-hop is also now being taken over. They're the million-dollar slaves, too.
Yeah, hip-hop is gone. But let me just throw two points at you real fast. One point is this. One fact. If people give my man Colin Powell enough credit, they always go say he was the United Nations and throw it out for Bush. But what Colin Powell really did was make sure that Africa got a lot of AIDS and malaria and net relief. That's why people don't realize George Bush gets more love in Africa than Barack Obama, because George Bush came with a Christian conservative way of thinking, and Barack Obama is trying to make all African countries accept homosexuality, and they're rebelling against that. That's why people don't realize that when I ain't tripping on Obama like that, everybody, but people need to realize when Obama go to Africa.
But why is Africa so messed up? You know what I'm saying? So it's almost like the beast comes in, he creates the problem, and he gives the solution. All right, I'm going to help you out.
I'm going to go here. It's an opinion. Watch Africa. It's just funny. I can say that, yeah, Africa's all fucked up. And then again, I can say Africa ain't fucked up. That's like somebody saying.
Yeah.
That's like somebody saying, man, it's dangerous in Chicago, man. It ain't dangerous here.
Yeah.
Because people don't realize, man, look at Libya. Look at Egypt.
Yeah.
I can name so many prosperous countries in Africa, but people might pick the most ratchetest spots where protection has kept everybody down. I mean, like this. I tell everybody this cool.
Yeah.
I'm a black Republican.
That's propaganda.
I tell everybody this cool. I'm a black Republican. Being a black Republican is like being a white African. It exists. You know, people act like there's no white Africans. You know, they are white Africans. You know, I mean, but it's just the fact that it's how they frame the picture. You know, how they gonna, now, if we want to go on the story about these girls in Nigeria, what's the real story in Nigeria? Are we trying to say Nigeria don't educate their women? I beg to differ. I have met a lot of educated women from Nigeria. I met a lot of educated men from Nigeria. I know that Nigeria is not the backwoods country that we want to say it is. But, you know, that's like, that reminds me of this. You remember when we was in school and the Black Hawk went down and everybody was tripping on Bill Clinton like, how the hell are these skinny people with sticks defeating us? You know, what do you mean? We just thought they were skinny and starving for food. They beating us? Because of the propaganda, i.e., let's go to Yemen. You mean to tell me these cats are on boats robbing people? Pirates? Now, hold on. Now, this ain't no backwater ass bougie, you know what I'm saying? I'm just picking spots. Let's go back to Timbuktu. I mean, all these places still exist here. It's just that he who frames the picture tells the story. And even here in not to you, my friend, even in all the intellectuals over here in America, we still got this picture of Africa being the ooga, booga, booga, ooga. Can't see that, man. I mean, I went to school with Nigerians, Senegalese, I mean, Zimbabwean. I went to school with a lot of Africans. You know, my opinion of Africa is totally different than, you know, I've never been to Africa.
But you know, I see it. Listen, I see them come over here every day, making money, braiding hair, get their own business hotel. I mean, they coming over here. I mean, how he come over here and make money? He be in a backwards ass town with strips and y'all. You know, it don't happen like that. I mean, there was people coming to Central State University to take water reclamation classes to go back and help their people out. So what I'm saying is that means they had enough education to get the fuck out the neighborhood, come to America, and study. I mean, oh, Lord have mercy. So what I'm saying is...
They just get, so it was a media thing. So what is our major media? What is that? Like, you know, that's what I'm saying. It's like a psychological and spiritual warfare that's going on. And it's almost... And then this is, you know, like you said, we went to school with people from Africa, different places. You're like, okay, well, damn, I ain't really, you know, so... Where is it that we get our information from? You know, our people. You know what I mean? Because when you mention certain things to people, you can just tell. That's not true because I read. You know, I seen it on. You know, it's like, but not understanding what the media, what music, and like I said before, going back to the whole hip hop thing. I mean, that's why I said it's a good thing that our generation came through that, and hopefully may be able to spread the word to these young cats coming up. That okay, no, you got to realize that the music, it made a shift, and it didn't make a shift to, the times just changed. No, it's nothing really makes a swift shift like that, you know what I'm saying, where now it's just totally nothing, you know what I mean? So it's like, okay, well, what is it in that, or who's controlling these things that's going on?
I hate to be in politics, man. It was Bill Clinton. Let's go in the 80s when we had the Cosby Show on. That's been the Reagan and Bush days. You know, I'm just saying, you have certain values. Certain people bring certain values. Now, we may laugh at them, you know, the Reagan back in the 80s. If you look at the 80s, everything was so Lily White, perfect Christian and all like that. And the rebelness was like, that. We can't live it like that. That's fake. That's what have you. We get Bill Clinton, oh, yeah, he keeping it real. Oh, man, he cheating on his wife. Oh, wow. Oh, now we accepting all this illicit behavior. Oh, wow. Now let's flip the script. Here comes George Bush again in here. I'm practicing more authority, Christian conservative. No, this and that. Oh, man, go ahead on, whatever. We want cool-ass Barack Obama. I want homosexuality. Yay! The point I'm saying is everything when it's presented to us in a good manner, we reject it no matter how we look at it. We cheer Bill Clinton on while he's saying three strikes out, nigga, I'm your black president. We cheer Bill Clinton on. We told Sister Soldier to stop talking that stuff. And you know what I'm saying? Shut up now. I mean, yay, we need to kill conscious hip-hop. That's right, Sister Soldier, be quiet. I'm just saying. And what happened? Reginald Denny kicking the spot. I mean, O.J., if you steal a pizza in your third strike, that's life in jail. Welfare reform. I'm locking all you blacks up. Hey, your black college money, I'm shutting it down. But we love you, Bill Clinton, because you're a Democrat, and that's what we got to do. What I'm saying is playing the game.
Oh, that goes back to that mentality thing. You know what I'm saying? Why do we keep thinking that a benevolent, you know, white man or person in the White House gonna do anything anyway? Well, we know that they're not controlling it anyway. That's just the face of the, you know. But it's like, come on, it's like, man, we keep doing the somify. We just keep doing this, repeating the same thing over and over again. You know, and then
like,
you can hear that in Dr. King's voice when he made the Vietnam speech. Like, okay, all right, I've been going through this for 12 years now, the civil rights stuff, and he got to the point where he saw it. So that's what I'm saying. It never changes. The only thing that changes is the technology. Okay, the cars, this, the cell phones, this and that. But the whole agenda hasn't changed. We still have a slave-master-slave relationship. We still got cooning. You know, we got some people that want to escape and breathe. It's like, man, we work on our, the real conscious people, you work on your day job and I work on my day job, but I'm always trying to do something else to get off that motherfucker. Like, damn, that's the plantation. I'm trying to find a way to get out of it, to escape. But you got some people like, oh, man, you better come to work. You know what I'm saying? I ain't about to, you better, you know, at least I'm getting money. You know what I'm saying? So it's that, it's the same.
Let me give you an example. That's so true. You remember 1995. I came down to Central for homecoming, first time back homecoming. I came with a little RV. And I said, hey, cool. You said, why be this RV, Jim? I said, I'm trying to take you to the Million Man March. What's up? Now, you win, a couple other people win. How many people said they got to go to work that Monday? Couldn't call it off. Couldn't call it off for the biggest event of history.
That's my point.
I can't call. The point I'm saying is this. Let me go back to his history, historical views. The Democratic Party has always been mad at the niggas at the plantation. They just treat niggas to be back on the plantation. Now, here on the Republican side, hey, man, we need more black babies. Fuck abortion. On that side, we fuck black babies, have abortion. On this side, man, we believe prayer in school. We believe God in school. On that side, we don't believe God be nowhere in existence. On my side, we believe one man, one woman, that's how God meant to be like that. On the other side, no, it's about homosexuality. What I'm saying is this. So when I jump on this side, I'm a Tom Sawyer. Like, no. My beliefs are totally different than how you believe it. Because you're making law. Your laws and all your beliefs that you're passing are killing me now. Now, on this side, where y'all talking, I'm talking about fucking letting the government leave me alone. You talking about getting rid of welfare. God damn it, y'all hands, I'm not getting rid of welfare. Sometimes when niggas lose it all, when we lose it all is when the fuck we build it up. You know what I'm saying? If they got rid of welfare tomorrow, nigga, you think we're going to build this shit right back up? Hell, in a heartbeat. In a heartbeat. You know, we are depending too much on massa. I mean, like this. I don't know about it in Michigan, but in Illinois, you got a felony. You know what I'm saying? Drugless, what have you, like 16, 17, 18, whatever. And you got a baby mama. And your baby mama lives on whatever federal, government property, Section A housing, what have you. Your ass can't go see your fucking kids. Here you are, grown ass man, probably 30 years old, whatever. You know what I'm saying? Did the right thing, you ain't got in trouble no more, whatever. So one feeling, you never can see your kids. I mean, that's how the man got you fucked up. Makes you won't be in your kids. I mean, and these are laws we say, but don't change them, man. Are you willing to say fuck my family for fucking a card that's going to give me some food and my taxes going to raise up and my card ain't going to change? Listen. You can give me $275 on a fucking link card, ATM card, whatever you want to call your food stamp card. But the price of bread ain't going to go the fuck up, but your check ain't going to stay the same. You're going to stay the same. You know, and you, I mean, oh, my God. But what I'm saying is that it's called conditioning. Free check. But Lyndon Johnson did the best thing he gave. He put the niggas back on a plantation. He gave out poverty pimping money. He gave money to the The L. Rookers got fucking money to start a fucking, you know what I'm saying, to start the gang up. I'm just saying, so much money went out at the time, and niggas just get the money to enslave other niggas. And the game been the same. Everybody been looking for a grant from the government. All since cool. It's our parents' fault. All our parents are doing, been looking for grants from the government to come start some hook little program to get over, because they started happening in the 60s and 70s. Not realizing the game is
civil rights movement. That's the civil rights movement.
But hold on. Cool, the game is, listen, that's why parents are wrong after not going back to school. The game changed every 10, 20 years, man. Nothing to stay the same.
Yeah.
Bail bonds ain't back yet. I mean, shit, that was 20 years ago. They might come back another 5 or 10. You know what I'm saying? Style changes up every 20 years. You know what I'm saying? As our parents' fault, because they just got free. In their mind, they just got free. And it's
funny.
They're retiring. And all they got now, they taking it with them. And their children were never meant to have it. We were never meant to have it.
Yeah.
We were never meant to have it. So my point is this. If we were never meant to have it, let's get our own right now. Let's play the game, because we ain't going back to Africa. We've been in America, real talk. We've been in America this long, and we ain't assimilated. If we ain't learned the game or assimilated to the point where we can look out for ourselves like the Irish, the Italians, and Jews, then, hey, that's our fault. Because in the end, we're going to need the talented 10, for real. Well, we're in the talented 10.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? We are the black intellectuals, see? In 2014 and 2015, I'm only dealing with black intellectuals. no black whiners, no black Right now, black Americans got to know what the problem is at, how to address the problem, not only holistically, but psychologically, you know. And then we take all that, and let me give you an example. And then that sentence I got. I'm going, one of my platforms is HR 40, House Resolution 40. It's a slave reparations study bill. It's the study effect that slavery had on America. Now, this bill has to be done is called up. There's a bill that's supposed to be Oklahoma bill. This bill is in the House right now to pay all those people that got the bombs dropped on the Tulsa, Oklahoma ride. It's a House Resolution bill. This means call it up. Now, when I go to Congress, win or lose, I'm going to be Republicans. Republicans have no other choice but call these bills up. What you going to do? And then I'm going to see what the black folks are. I mean, it's time to start playing the game. You know, white man this, white man that. I ain't tripping on that. Sterling did not say nigger. And Bundy was right. All blacks are doing now are killing their babies and not taking care of their parents. That's a goddamn truth. But that bitch over there saying, hey, being raped is all good, that's not right. That's not right for my daughters. That's not right for my mother. That's not right for my grandmother. Because there are children out there that have not learned. We don't even see roots no more. They don't even give us the happy-go-lucky roots. You know, I've seen harder slavery movies than Roots. But at least my kids can see the plight of what slavery was. They won't give us that no more. They have erased slavery from the minds of our children, you know, who, you see, there's no one talking about that. And now, that's why I'm having affirmative action got taken. So, to get going to Michigan, 4 hours away at Central State University, go down there, all you ballers, all you hoopers, football players, kick your talents down on Wilberforce. That's the point I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. But like I said, that's the psychological part, but that's the thing, you know what I mean? Bundy, you may, you know, somebody like that, a cracker, make a statement like that, but then once again, he won't go, or he can't probably go deeper into the whole psychological point on why people may be aborting their babies or why this and that. I mean, this ain't just, I don't necessarily like when man, yeah, we know we jacked up, but ultimately it is for a damn reason. You know what I'm saying? I mean, but on the flip side of it, we jacked up, but then we not. It's almost like a thing just for us to be able to even recognize that we need to do certain things and having a conversation, man, about it. It's saying on how we have evolved, and my thing is looking back on our ancestors that went through certain things, and then my thing is paying homage to them even more. And I mean, like, I get the old girl said the comedy stuff, but then once again, it's that, you know, people are being caught up into that. That's my point. Like, even on the plantation, it was always that slave thinking, oh, okay, if I do this, master gonna treat me right. And that's once again that psychological point. Part that we was thinking like, oh, okay, well, if I do this, man, just like in the 12 Years a Slave, this dude kept thinking, oh, I'm going to tell this white guy, I feel so sorry for this white guy that I'm going to give him this money that I've been saving or whatever, right? And then the dude still go tell the master, you know what I'm saying? He thinking you trusting, right. you feeling sorry for the dude so much. See, that's my point. But then not realizing, oh, okay, so, man, if you think about it, young man, and looking at and knowing how slavery was, and I don't want to harp on it like that, but just think about what happened to us based on that. You know what I'm saying? On how you would crack a joke on that now. Like, damn, that must really have been some. We are really going through this post traumatic, I mean, stress, man. Like, okay, damn, what should we do? You know what I'm saying? You look back in time, all your damn leaders was killed or you know, deported, whatever the case may be. You had your Oklahoma, yeah, now you got prosperous neighborhoods. We going to bomb that shit. Boom, bomb it. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, okay, right. Damn. So it's like we really been caught in a whole point like, damn, what do we what do we do? We can't go back to Africa. They like, man, we don't want y'all over here. You know what I'm saying? So then once again, what does that really make us then?
All we got, America, and it's all we got. You see, it's all we got. And how about this? We so much Americans that we're not even a minority no more. Feel me? We're not even a minority, but we ask for minority status. And again, when I go to Congress, one of my deals, one of my things is to separate blacks from minorities. If LGBTs, women, SAs, Asians, and everybody else want to be in that group, they should be in that group. But being a black American now, I should be getting the rights. The laws that were passed for minorities should be strictly for black folks because they was used to enslave those black folks and they was used to prevent those black folks from getting on. There has not been no laws stopping Hispanics from voting. There's no laws that fight stopping fags from voting. There's no laws stopping transgenders from voting. There's no laws stopping ethnics from voting. I mean, all of them, you can always get jobs. You know, everything that stopped from us, but the point I'm trying to say is that why that was dangerous is because it's spreading like wildfire. I'm going to play one quick little clip of this lady on MSNBC. And she
That's her job. I want to go back to the SNL controversy, Chris, because this is the context for this, is that Leslie Jones, Hashir Jamada, and the third writer were actually hired because SNL was criticized for not being diverse enough. So now they bring this diversity, and sort of ironically, was it that maybe SNL's format was really not ready for sort of what she was bringing to the table?
I think what a lot of people are outraged about is that it just wasn't smart. It wasn't smart humor. She just came on and began talking about slavery, comparing Lupita Nyong'o, who's really having her Cinderella moment, to being at a slave auction or being on a plantation. It was in poor taste, and if she could have somehow worked in Donald Sterling or Clive and Bundy and somehow made it smarter, we have a story up right now in the Griot that said it would have been a hit. But it was a big mess. It was, and the timing right now, we're in a really racially sensitive, heightened timing with all these things happening, so SNL probably should have known better. But it's SNL at the end of the day. It's a comedy show.
It's a comedy show. And I want to read, we actually reached out to some comedians, Jackie, just to get their commentary as well. Yeah. And Claudia Wallace, who's one of the folks who sent us back a statement, this is what she said. She said, I wasn't as offended, but it did make me uncomfortable. The energy of that piece didn't fit the show. It made SNL look desperate to show, hey, we can be as edgy as Key and Peele, but honestly, they can't. Is the issue here that this is really a broadcast network format, so it's a little bit different than, let's say, a cable format or even live sketch comedy?
You do have to be more careful on national network television, but I respectfully disagree with you. I know Leslie. I've seen her perform hundreds of times. She's aggressively funny. That's her job. And they said way worse things on Weekend Update throughout the year. She was amazing. She was hilarious. Being a juicy woman myself, I know I'll go for a top dollar in the slavery day.
Now, see what I'm saying? I'll go for top dollar. If somebody else ain't meaning it. I'll go for top dollar. This is my fear that now people going to think, like, going to the, I mean, hold on. Now, even.
I'm single right now. But back in the slave days, I would have never been single.
It's Slavery Night Live with SNL.
Before I'm sitting out, this is how everybody's standing in the show.
I really don't see, man, how that was even Slavery Night Live. Like, are you serious, man? Like, I just, that right. But that's ignorant, man. You know, that's the epitome of, like, how we would look at an old Shirley Temple movie. With this coon dude sitting in there laughing and showing his teeth. That's what that is. It's like, man, Slavery Night Live. Are you serious, man? But
no,
yeah.
And that's how they saw it, and they laughed at it. It was funny. And she provided the humor over our pain and suffering. Now, I got 90 seconds.
That's like them whack rappers saying that whack stuff, too. You know what I'm saying? It's the same thing now. I mean, them dudes ain't saying that, man. It's the same thing. That's basically what they're saying, too.
I got 90 seconds, Coop. I got to call this caller. I just heard the caller. Hey, call, you got anything to say 937 before I go off? I got 90 seconds. I'm sorry. I just saw you on the board. I'll put you back on hold. All right, 90 seconds, Coop. Anything you want to say to the people?
Nah, man, like I said, man, I think ultimately, man, we need to understand and really dwell inside to realize and who we really are as a people, who we really are, you know, as just a
you know, coming from about a slavery and just that with us even having conversations like this, man, it has to be something more unique than us than being a so-called African American or black.
Well, listen, let me pose this question. Let me pose this question tomorrow. I want to ask you this question like I asked you last week. Is the plan that we always see the white man put out there for the black man, is that plan working, still working, or has it worked? And my man R. Twain Stevens told me that I shouldn't say bad, that I do apologize because I don't know slang. I apologize if that's bad, like saying nigga. I didn't know what's the proper word of homosexuality. I really do apologize. I'm sorry, R. Twain. I didn't mean to hurt your feelings. Good night. May God be with you. But the question, if you ain't doing it tomorrow, you 2937, anybody else, is the plan working or has it worked? And game over. Let me know about that tomorrow, everybody. It's Jimmy Lee Tillman. Good night, and may God be with you.
I'm single right now, but back in the slave days, I would have never been single.
It's Slavery Night Live with SNL writer-performer Les.